it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, the Ghost Crew, having proved effective in their strikes against the Empire, win the attention of a powerful new enemy, Grand Marv Tarkin. We're talking call to action this week. How you doing, Chris?
Doing good.
That's good.
I had a good week. I helped Scott McGregor and Tina move a little bit, so I got free Captain Marvel and Five Guys afterwards.
I still haven't seen Captain Marvel.
It's good. I don't put it in the top tier of the Marvel movies, but it's a solid mid tier. Like, you know, it's a smaller story, although it has a lot of space stuff in it, which I guess makes it bigger and more cosmic, but it's mostly Captain Marvel's origin story. So you get to see de-aged Samuel Jackson too.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping I get to see it before 2-1 BCon, because I know everybody's going to be like, let's talk about Captain Marvel at 2-1 BCon. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't foresee me being able to see it before then. I don't foresee me seeing it. So I hope I get a chance to, but I really doubt I will. I had fun. I continued my chronological watch of Star Wars with my stepmom.
What are you up to?
We did episode 2 in the Clone Wars movie.
Oh, okay. I find episode 2 a lot more like watchable than episode 1 with the new people. It's a lot more action packed, even with the romance in it.
She was not a fan of Hayden Christensen's acting.
No. Yeah. No.
But it was funny, cuz like after we finished episode 2, I was like, "So Lynn, did you think it was better than episode 1?" And she goes, "No." Just like that.
The movie or the acting?
The movie.
Okay. So what did she think of, the Clone Wars movie?
But hold on. There's one more point to that. And so finally I was like, yeah, I could see that. And I was like, but I really do like Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi. And she looks at me and goes, yes, he is a very nice young man.
That Obi-Wan. What a nice young man.
So she thought Ewan McGregor was great. And so when we went to go watch the Clone Wars movie, I told her, I was like, you know, I gave her the explanation. I'm like, these are the first 3 episodes of Clone Wars that were jammed together in a movie. And so I was like, it is going to be a little disjointed and stuff like that. But and I told her, like, the first half of the movie is really solid, but the second half of the movie sucks because it's just kind of tacked on there. And she was also very excited because she and I were big fans of Timeless. And Matt Lanter was one of the main characters. And so I told her, I was like, Matt Lanter is actually the voice of Anakin in this. And so she was super excited about that. And she actually really liked the movie. And she actually didn't think the ending sucked. She was like, well, yeah, like the Padme and Zero stuff was like, it was kind of added on and at the end. And it was a little disjointed. But she was like, but I feel like I actually understood Padme a little bit more than I did in episode 2. And I was like, Yeah.
That's true. I think like the problem with the second half of the movie is it's just so weird that you go from the big action part of the movie that's visually arresting and fast paced and then slow it down at the end. So it's like it was a weird pacing thing. And then you change the whole feel of it from high tech battleground to, you know, Jabba's palace sort of thing, and a sort of weird like domestic drama with the baby, you know.
Yeah.
It was a weird tonal shift, which would make sense with TV shows.
They add Zero in the last 20 minutes too.
Like, see, that's another thing, is a lot of people hated Zero. I don't really hate Zero, so it wasn't as Zero's kind of fun for me to watch, you know.
I did your thing, like when Zero first showed up, he was talking and Lynn was watching, and I just looked at him and went, it's Capote the Hutt. And she just started laughing.
It's like, yeah, it's like the Louisiana, it's like a Southern dandy version of Truman Capote. And once you know that, like, a lot of people use that as a slam on him, but it's like, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. And who would have thought of that? You know, it's unexpected, and it's just, I don't know. Zero the Hutt amuses the hell out of me.
Yeah. And so next, you'll be so proud of me, Chris, because it was like Sophie's choice. I chose, out of 121 episodes of Clone Wars, I chose about 20 to 25 to show her.
That's a good solid 10 hours of viewing.
Yeah.
Almost.
So it was so hard to choose, but do you want to hear the list that I chose?
Sure.
So season one, Rookies, which was the introduction of like Fives and the Captain Rex episode and stuff like that. The second one was Innocence of Ryloth, which was the one with the clone troopers and the little girl. I just think that's a really good episode. I personally chose Hostage Crisis because it's Cad Bane's introduction. I slid that one in there just because I love Cad Bane. It's not the bigger point of the story, but I love Cad Bane so much, so I just wanted to show him to her. Then from season two, I did Landing at Point Rain and Weapons Factory, which is the Geonosis one where you meet Barrow, Sophie, and her and Ahsoka get trapped in the tank. The next one I did was The Deserter because I wanted to have a really good clone episode to help build that clone story. And then after that is the Mandalore threesome where it introduces Satine, the Voyage of Temptation, and then Pre Vizsla turning on her. After that was Heroes on Both Sides, which is the one where Padme and Ahsoka go to the Separatists and they meet Padme's friend who's a Separatist. I like that one because you get to actually see the other point of view. I am still on the fence about these three. They're really awesome episodes, but I like it because of the Tarkin Anakin thing. But I did Citadel Counterattack and Citadel Rescue because
I totally see that.
Yeah, because at first I was going to skip it, but then I was like, well, that kind of actually really... Well, A, it's a really good Anakin arc. It's a really good Ahsoka arc. But it also introduces that Anakin-Tarkin relationship that will become Vader and Tarkin. So I'm still kind of on the fence about that one, but I still kind of support it. I'll see how I feel when I get there and see how Lynn's feeling. The next one's the Umbara arc. After that, it's Brothers in Revenge, which is the Return of Darth Maul. And then all of season five, except for the droid arc and not the kids arc. So that includes Saw Gerrera, the Mandalore arc with Maul and Satine, and the trial of Ahsoka's trial and her leaving the Order. So all of season five minus the kid and the droid arc. And then I chose only doing the Fives arc from season six.
Okay, that makes sense.
I thought about doing the Yoda arc with the whole Sifo Dyas and stuff like that, but then I realized I could explain it in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Yep, for sure. Yeah.
So that's my.
Are you going to watch all that before you watch episode 3?
Yes, we're going in chronological order.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to be doing all that, episode 3, and then it would be Solo.
You could binge like 5 or 6 episodes with your mom at a time.
Yeah, that's actually like what we usually do. When we were watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, we would watch 3 or 4 episodes in a sitting.
Yeah, three episodes is just of Clone Wars is a little more than an hour. So yeah, you could get 5 or 6 in there in the length it would take to watch a normal Star Wars movie. So
yeah,
cool.
And then after that's gonna be Solo. I've already started showing her some Rebels, only because she was really honestly wondering why I named her Cat Zeb. And so I've already showed her a little bit of Rebels. And on one hand, I want to show her Rebels because it does tie into like the formation of the Rebel Alliance. But at the same time, unlike Clone Wars, where it's episodic, it doesn't it's not as episodic. It all builds on each other. So I'm like, I on one hand, I really don't want
to. It would be harder to not watch the whole thing, or not just skip to later season, maybe skip to later seasons or something. You know, yeah. Watch the last two or three seasons, maybe.
But she did really like Rebels of what I've shown her so far. So I might actually do all four seasons of Rebels. And then after that would be Rogue One, episode 4, 5, and 6. As of right now, I'm not doing Resistance because season one hasn't done anything really that's not in Force Awakens. And then 7 and 8. So, chronological order. It's interesting watching it in chronological order because I'm catching things in chronological order that I never really quite caught before. So, it's been a lot of fun.
All right, keep us updated on this.
I will, and I actually talked to her tonight. I said when we complete all the chronological orders, she would love to talk on the show about it.
Excellent.
So,
excellent.
We'll have both my moms.
Excellent.
Well, you ready to get started on this one?
I am.
Did you like it?
I did. I didn't love it, but I liked it. It was a decent episode, yeah.
I think this is the best episode so far.
Really? Oh, interesting. Yeah. I have very little notes on this. Yeah.
See, I have a lot of notes on this. I think this is the turning point episode. Like, this is where everything turns and for everything. So, let's get into it. All right.
Okay.
Call to Action is the 13th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on February 9, 2015. It was written by Greg Wiseman and Simon Kinberg and was directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. Steven Stanton reprises his role from Clone Wars as Grand Moff Tarkin. Tarkin's armor, while taking action in the battlefield, is similar to General Veers from The Empire Strikes Back. This episode marks the first on-screen appearance of Alton Castle. He's the one that so far in the show does all the Imperial propaganda broadcasts throughout the season so far. This is just his first on-screen appearance. And Castle wears a gray blue Imperial uniform and an Imperial media badge rather than a military rank badge. Computer spikes have long been a part of Star Wars lore. They were first introduced as a computer countermeasure device in the 1990 role-playing game supplement Kraken's Rebel Field Guide, and were heavily featured in as a consumable device in the Knights of the Old Republic game. The Imperial Patrol Transport is a monochromatic makeover from the Republic police helicopter seen in the Clone Wars. Initially, in the original script of this episode, they didn't have the Grand Inquisitor executing Oresco and Grint on Tarkin's order, but Dave Filoni added it back in later to introduce Tarkin to a new young audience. In Rebels Recon, Steven Stanton talks a bit about being excited to come back as Tarkin. He was a fan of Peter Cushing long before he ever saw Star Wars, and talks about the dynamic where you have a bad guy like Tua, Kallus, and Grand Inquisitor, and they're shaking in their boots because Tarkin has showed up, and it's the boss is here mentality. And Dave Filoni says in Rebels Recon, in his words, Tarkin's doing great. He explains that Tarkin has all the power right now and that he's still rising. A New Hope is the peak of Tarkin's power with the Death Star, but here he is still rising and succeeding. And Pablo Hidalgo says that there's the classic cinematic looking villains like Darth Maul and General Grievous, but, and I quote him, there's something terrifying about a severe British man, and that just made me laugh. And finally, in the Rebels Recon episode for next week for Rebels Resolve, I added this in just because it's something we've kind of mentioned before, and this was a nice clarification to it. Pablo Hidalgo clarified some things about why the Jedi are being treated like fairy tales, even though it's only been 15 years. He says that we, as fans, have followed the story of the Jedi to know their history, but the average person in the Star Wars galaxy has never seen a Jedi. Even at the height of the Clone Wars, there was only 10,000 Jedi in the galaxy compared to the billions and billions of people out there. Average people might have heard of the Jedi, which is why it made it so easy for the Emperor to shape a bad image about them. Palpatine talking shit against you!
That's totally something that we, like, said in the past, you and I.
It was just nice hearing a clarification about it, though. Palpatine's talking shit about you, Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you going to do? He's talking shit about you and your Jedi.
Ass's kick, I will.
How Hey, I got the bubble gum. I'm chewing gum right now. And if I spit it out, we'll be all out of bubble gum.
Yoda's all out of bubble gum.
I can't shove it through my microphone to you, so. Hi, Yoda. How are you?
Yoda likes Bazooka Joe. Little comic books. Funny jokes.
Do you know that song? Bazooka, zooka, bubblegum. Bazooka, zooka, bubblegum. My mom gave me a penny. She said, go buy a henny. Do you know that song?
Nope.
We used to sing it all the time in Girl Scouts. Instead,
Girl Scouts?
I got bubblegum.
Yoda knows not of Girl Scouts.
You and
good
like
thing,
them.
Too.
They have amazing cookies. I got a costume to get back to
the stands. Amazing cookies.
Now you sound like the Cookie Monster.
Yoda do anything for a cookie.
All right, you ready for your question this week?
Mm-hmm.
All right, this question comes from, oh yeah, Mr. Paul C. Kelly.
Yeah, oh.
Who is your most favorite and least favorite colleague on the Jedi Council back in the pre-Clone Wars and Clone Wars days? And feel free to talk about why.
Worse? Everybody knows. Yaddle worse. Stupid Yaddle. Mean Yaddle.
I forgot you have a hatred of Yaddle.
Yaddle. Best? Liked? Controversial this is a little. Cypher Diaz.
Really?
Can't put my finger on it, but reminded me of Skywalker for some reason. Something.
I feel like I need more about this. But he started the Clone Wars, in a way.
Job security for Yoda.
Nice.
Kept Yoda busy for many years, it did.
And then it all was destroyed and you went on a very long vacation.
Can't last forever.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Yoda. I'll see you next week. Bye.
Oh, by the way, Hope, I'll just explain that. I just want to make sure I'm making the right joke. Mark Hamill did Sifo Dyas's voice, right?
No, he did Darth Bane.
Oh.
So you want to redo that?
No, it's okay.
Okay. Why don't we just leave this in then?
Okay, there we go.
We'll just leave it in then. Hi, guys. Chris.
There you go. Now you know the shit that we cut out every week.
We're saying little notes to each other. And Chris just cuts them out.
We cut other stuff out too, but you'll still never know that.
All right, Act 1.
Act 1.
We open with fanfare and fear because a new visitor is coming to Lothal and has everyone on edge. My baby girl with a U, Minister Tua, Agent Alexander Callus, whose name I will not sing because this is a serious scene, and the Grand Inquisitor, a.k.a. Mr. Grande, are all standing at attention to greet the newcomer. And the shuttle lands in the hangar, and the door opens, and off walks fucking Tarkin, a.k.a. Farkin. Farkin has come to Lothal. I'm also super happy we can also bring back the nickname Farkin from Clone Wars, so I'm very happy about that, you guys. You don't even know. Anyway, baby girl 2 is trying to act all nice and like, oh, great and powerful Farkin, we are so honored by your presence here. And Farkin's like, cut the crap, Tua. Oh, he's British. Cut the crap, Tua. I can't do a British accent. I'm not even going to try. You had one job here since Governor Price is currently in the Thrawn novel timeline. Stop the rebels. And you haven't even stopped them at all. And you, Callus, are supposed to be good at your job. And
Farkin's even harder to do the British accent because he does the fancy R rolls and everything. And
It's actually really interesting listening to Stephen Stanton talk normally because he doesn't sound anything like Peter Cushing, but man, he does a good Peter Cushing. And Callus is all like, but sir, we're trying. Lothal doesn't have resources. and Tua peeps up again that the rebels have a Jedi, which make Farkin go, oh yeah, a Jedi, something I will pretend that my life wasn't saved by during the Citadel arc of the Clone Wars because I'm into Imperial propaganda now. Too bad you don't have anyone who specializes in Jedi hunting. Oh wait, that's your job, Mr. Grande, and you're failing at that too. And Grande just looks at him and raises an eyebrow but doesn't say anything. And Tarkin lays it out flat for Tua. The Jedi died, every last one of them. So this rebel can't be a Jedi, and Tarkin's gonna show them how to beat them. Meanwhile, our heroes are running away from Commandant Oresko and Taskmaster Grint, and they're racing through a town to avoid stormtroopers and making them crash, or they knock them out. And Ezra has a last crazy plan to help them get away, and Sabine compliments him on growing as a rebel. They get back to the Ghost, where Hera and Zeb are watching Senator Gall Travis is personally calling out our heroes and spreading their picture around. And just a reminder, in case you missed last week, Gall Travis was a senator pretending to be a rebel, but last week's episode exposed him that he works for the Empire. Anyway, he's offering a reward specifically for our heroes. This is bad press for the Ghost crew. Well, all of this gives Kanan a really good idea. He wants to broadcast his own message of hope, not just to Lothal, but the surrounding planets in their sector. They need to get control of an Imperial communications tower, a big one. And they will broadcast the truth, something that people don't normally hear. And since this is kind of the kind of thing that his parents used to do, Ezra's down for this plan. What'd you think of Act One? I got a shit ton of.
I liked it. I'm always up for seeing Farkin crawl in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a lot of notes that aren't goofy.
Do the goofy. I have the serious. Who'll do it?
I think I'm gonna call Ezra the Lothcat Whisperer now. Because that seems to be his...
That's Act 2. So do you have any Act 1 notes?
Oh, never mind. Okay, I am looking at my Act 2. Sorry.
But he is the Lothcat Whisperer. He really
is. I had a note for Farkin saying the Jedi leaping from the pages of ancient history. Just pushing it.
Yeah.
I actually like that note
because he's also telling it to Grande, who was a Jedi Temple Guard not about 15 years ago.
right, and he's still there. I'm right here, you know. I stood in the Jedi Library, you know, when it had all the books in it.
He was a Jedi Temple Guard 15 years ago.
And I like, there was a little bit of old Mickey Rooney movies, Mickey Rooney and... I can't remember who it was. I think it was. I can't remember the actress who was in The Wizard of Oz. Judy Garland.
Yeah. I think it was Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland.
Always used to do movies where they'd get in trouble and be like, I know how we'll get out of this. Let's put on a show. And that's sort of what's going on. We're going to put on a show. Talk to all the rebels. And then there was another, when they were describing... when our crew is getting chased to the city on speeder bikes, they're like, well, there were no casualties. I thought I saw like 3 or 4 casualties at least. If they were, I saw Kanan, you know, shoot a stormtrooper like 5 feet away, like off his speeder.
Oh yeah, because he turned around on his bike to shoot
and
him.
Just blasted the guy point blank in the chest, you know.
I think he shot the bike.
There was another one where the bike, the guy like flew off the bike into a brick wall and the bike exploded sort of like in Endor. I don't know. It looked like a few stormtroopers died. I wonder if they just like
cover it up.
Maybe they like shove a few stormtroopers under the bus, you know, they didn't have any family. Nobody will notice that they're gone or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no casualties, just so they look better, especially in front of Farkin, you know. Obviously, you want to look good in front of Farkin because he uses the same Vader method. That's the Imperial way of just like, oh, you messed up. We'll take out a few of the lower echelons to keep the higher echelons on their toes.
Yeah.
But that's about all I had for part one.
Okay, here we go.
Glad to see Farkin's freckly face.
He looks good in this animation. I like this animation of Farkin because, like, it was much, since he was younger in Clone Wars, it was much more smoother. But this one, like, it actually almost accentuates him a little bit too much. But
well, that was sort of, Peter Cushing was sort of like that too. He was a skull face himself. And I like they put age spots on his face, you know, his freckly age spots on him.
It was
nice.
So, I love the opening shot of this episode. Like, you have the capital city, and then you see Tarkin ships come in, and the music is just cranked up to the Imperial max. Like, it's just a really pretty opening. It's really nice. I also think it's really fun just watching all the bad guys flounder about because Tarkin's there. Like, Tua is trying to play it off. Like, the rebels are just, like, a little thing. And, like, Callus and Grunda are both just, like, keeping quiet and keeping their head down. They're just like, yeah, let's just let Tua take this one. It's Farkin. And then I was like, oh, guys, you threw Tua under the bus here. But then you get to, like, Tarkin just tearing each of them down one by one and just calling out their failures. Like he was like, Callus, like, you should have done your job, Tua. This isn't really a bad thing.
That's his upper management job. That's it. He's there to shake everybody. That's what I like about him is, like, Darth Vader and the Inquisitor are like the muscle, and they scare the hell out of people viscerally and physically. Tarkin, you could kick Tarkin's ass, although he could probably fight okay. He's probably got some minimal fight training, but almost
he's actually around him. On his planet, he's a renowned hunter.
Oh, but that's not the same as a hand-to-hand. Most of those guys, the Inquisitor could dice him into many little pieces if he wanted to. But Tarkin has the power of authority, and that's, like, that his power trumps, like, visceral muscle power in a lot of ways, and he's not afraid to use it, and that's what makes him scary.
I actually wrote, he is the district manager coming to a retail store.
Yeah, yes, he is.
And I know that fear of the district manager's coming, everyone look good.
Yeah, you could lose your job, which means that you are usually dead. Mm-hmm. That was somebody made a joke. I can't remember who during the Empire Strikes Back days that the euphemism for death in the Empire was, he went to work for Vader.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen so-and-so in a long time. Yeah, he went to work for Vader.
They actually talked about that. They actually talked about that a little bit in Thrawn Alliances. There's a character who I love called Commander Keemond, and he's in charge of the First Legion. And he's, like, recently, like, the fourth person to be in charge because, like, two didn't make it and Vader killed one. So he's like, I'm the fourth person this year in charge of the First Legion. Let's go! But Keemond's super capable, and I love him. But I ship him with a Rinda Price so hard. Anyway, I also just love the balls on Tarkin because he personally calls out one of Vader's Inquisitors who doesn't talk back to Tarkin. And it just shows how much power that Tarkin has and also how much just Tarkin doesn't give a fuck about the Force. Not everybody can look at one of Vader's secondhand man and just go, you sucked at your job. And Grande doesn't talk back to him. He just kind of raises an eyebrow and looks forward. And I just think that's a very nice, because, like, so far, like, Grande's been shown to be such a force and such an evil force and, like, very powerful. And then this old man walks in and he doesn't even raise his voice at all. So I think that's a very nice visual cue of how much power Tarkin has. And I'm giving you a chance to respond.
Unlimited power.
Though I do have to wonder, and I actually noted this again later in the episode, I just would love a clarification of the rank and hierarchy between Tarkin and Grande. Because I know that Grande serves Vader and the Emperor, but...
Oh, Tarkin definitely outranks him because he's doing his murder work for him.
But I was under the impression that the Inquisitors were a completely separate thing. They were separate from the politics and they were separate from the military.
I guess if they're under control of the Emperor, is they're the only one they answer to, but, like... I'm sure, but the Emperor can't be everywhere at once, though. He's got to have somebody. I mean, I think I have no, like, evidence to prove this, but I think if there was a dispute, I think that the Emperor would side with Tarkin over the the Inquisitor.
Yeah. So I just would like a clarification of their hierarchy. And I know I mentioned this later too in the episode. I noticed it a couple times where I was wondering about it. I love the escalation of tension just in this opening scene. Because the season up to this point still had a bit of an adventure of the adventure of the week feeling to it. There were like some darker things like Luminara and Kalos and Grande have been like villains and stuff like that. But like, this is where the show ramps up. Tarkin walks into the room and he's a new beast of his own. And it ties also into like the bigger picture of all of Star Wars. He is a bigger bad in the grander scope of things. So far, we've had just original characters as bad guys. This is Tarkin, original trilogy bad guy. He is here. And this now ties the show into the bigger story. And when you're seeing our bad guys of the show, like Grande and Kalos, in fear of Tarkin, you know that Tarkin's not somebody to be messed with. And this is when they start cranking up the show more. And like, this is the turning point moment of this show.
I guess.
Really? I think so. Because everything really kind of changes after this point. Because everything before this, like, they were on Lothal. It's all episodic. You have some episodes that are tied together, like Empire Day and Gathering Forces. But, like, you know, like, it's been, like, fun little adventures of, like, we're stealing. Here's Lando. Here's the droids. Here's C-3PO and R2 and stuff like that. But then you get to this point, and it's Tarkin. And,
well, things are getting serious. Now they're being taken seriously as a threat instead of just as, like, petty criminals or something.
But it's because of this point, just to jump ahead to next week in the season 2 finale, this is the reason, like, because they've been noticed by Tarkin, this is what allows them to leave and join the bigger rebels. So, like, everything before this has been, like, very much centered on them and stuff like that. This is the plot turn where they're like, we have to leave eventually because now we've been noticed and we're threatening Lothal now. So, like, this is a turning point moment.
It might be technically and from a writing standpoint, but like, I don't know. I'll have to see the next episode too, the next few episodes to see how I feel about that. Like,
yeah,
tonally, like this one felt very normal to me, you know, just sort of normal with Tarkin thrown in. So it's like, okay, they're starting to come to the attention of upper ranks, you know, they're starting to send some more big boys down because of it to see what's happening. But
see, I feel different. Like, I feel like this is not normal. This is big. Like, to me, this episode felt bigger.
It didn't feel important to me. I see the ramping up, but it didn't feel that. I, you know, not to be a spoiler, but I think it's later, a little later on, that's where I felt that, like, oh boy, things got real here. So.
See, I think to me, like, things get real because Tarkin's there. If he wouldn't have showed up, it would have just been another day.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to agree.
It's true, but it didn't have that emotional feel to me when I watched it, you know.
It's funny because, like, I'm not usually a fan of, like, original trilogy, like, stuff, and I'm the one that's like, but Tarkin's here. But yeah, my only other note that I have is it's about the actual rebel scene when they're talking about the differing broadcasts that the rebels want to do compared to the Imperial propaganda. We've kind of mentioned this before about how they want to tell the truth versus the propaganda. And I just wanted to note again, like, I really like that they keep bringing up these broadcasts and stuff like that, because it rivals a lot of our biased real world news channels. And I just like that insight of, like, showing, like, two different points of view of the same thing.
Yeah. And it's something you haven't really seen up to this point in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Not even in Clone Wars. You'd think there'd be a lot of propaganda in Clone Wars.
Very rarely. Like, I do remember at one point one of Padme's scenes, speeches was broadcast in Clone Wars, but even then it's not like
that was just a speech. That was somebody giving a speech, you know.
You don't have a character like Alton Castle who is like, "Hello, I'm a broadcaster. Welcome to the news."
Realistically, there would have been a propaganda network during the Clone Wars. You know, the Palpatine would have probably started up a, some sort of, you know, propaganda network. So,
you know, I just thought we do see it at one point, but it's really hard to see because it's in the middle of a chase scene. It's in the episode Lightsaber Lost with Ahsoka and Camel Joe. She's following the thief, who is a Jango jumper, and they're jumping on like floating billboards of Palpatine talking.
Right,
and,
right.
And Palpatine, because I remember doing the notes for it, because I read this speech that he's saying in the background. It is propaganda, like the Jedi will save us. Don't fear, blah blah blah. That is the only time I can actually think about that. I can actually recall propaganda being in Clone Wars. But even then, it's hidden because it's right in the middle of chasing of like Ahsoka chasing down this Jango jumper. But that's all I have for Act 1.
Oh, okay.
Act 2?
Well, let's get to Act 2 so I can get to my Lothcat Whisperer note.
I have a lot of notes in Act 2 as well. This is the majority of my notes.
Oh, good. Well, I won't keep you busy with my notes then.
Well, Act 2.
Act 2.
So, Aresto and Grint are called into the principal's office, and there is Farkin, Grande, Tua, and Callus waiting for them. After they sit, Grande comes forward and stands right behind the men. Farkin is playing it all cool, asking about the last time they saw the rebels. Grint and Aresco say, it's nothing really important since no one died. And Farkin goes, ah, but that is important because your rebels have a moral compass, which is very important to the cell. And Grint and Aresco are both surprised that there are other rebel cells out there. It's no matter to Farkin, since the rebels aren't unified. But if he's concerned with the Jedi that he blew off in Act 1, I don't get it. And the Jedi represents hope, and it's making people whisper in the streets about him. Because Aresco and Grint have failed so much, these whispers about the Jedi are getting stronger. He can't have that. And he gives a nod to the Grand Inquisitor, who decapitates Aresco and Grint. And Tua and Callus are both shaken at the sight.
Oh, now that's a question I got there. I thought he just stuck them through them. How did we know they were decapitated? I didn't see heads roll or anything.
Because you hear the sound of it spinning. And from where they're, if you look at the scene before it happens, you can see their heads, and then it flashes to Tua and Callus, and it goes back to the exact same scene, and their heads are not there.
I thought they just might be like leaned forward or something. Okay. Okay, I just missed that.
Yeah, he decapitates them, so. And Tarkin gives them their orders to use probe droids and that they will find the rebels. Failure now has big old consequences. Meanwhile, Sabine, Ezra, and Kanan are checking out the main Imperial Communications Tower on Lothal, and it's really heavily guarded and more than one of their normal jobs. And Sabine says that she has about five, if she could have about 5 minutes, she might have time to put in a data spike to upload. But that's a big maybe. But before they can scan a map of the tower, an Imperial transport comes by and poofs out a probe droid. It does. It's just like, and there's a probe droid. And it starts drifting down the road and getting really close to their bikes parked off to the side. And Ezra reaches out into the Force and gets a Lothcat to attack the probe droid. And the cat scratches at it until the probe crashes. And Ezra points out that if they just shot it, the Empire would know something was up. So our Blueberry is really growing in his rebel skills this week. They hop off the overhang, get their bikes, and speed away. Little do they know, though, the probe is still recording. Which leads Callus bringing the info to Tarkin and Grande that they found the rebels near the communication tower. And Callus wants to increase security, but Tarkin wants to lure them into a trap. And Callus is like, okay. And then he leaves. It's true, David Oyelayo, when he did that scene, he was just like, as you wish. I laughed at it too hard. And Farkin gives Grande the quote-unquote chance to redeem himself because he wants to capture Kanan alive. And Grande is like, oh, fine. Back with the Ghost crew, they're putting together an old radio broadcasting thingy. And the plan is that Chopper will upload the data spike once they sneak in, and as long as the tower is broadcasting, anyone listening will hear them. And then Hera will get them all out of there on the Phantom. Ezra doesn't seem as enthusiastic as he was before, so Kanan takes him on a walk. Because it's important to walk your Ezra's. And Kanan, and Ezra's not so sure about this plan. He doesn't think that he can be as inspirational as his parents when they used to do broadcasts. And his parents spoke out, and he lost them. He doesn't want to lose his new family too over something very similar to last time. And Kanan gives some really good life advice for Ezra. And this is just good advice in general, and I was like, way to go. Everyone has lost things. We will all have more losses. but we cannot let that stop us from taking risks, and we have to move forward. That's a really nice quote there, Space Dad. And Kanan never really learned that from his master until right now, as he's trying to teach it to Ezra, and they're still learning things together. What'd you think about two? I cut it off before they went to the tower, so.
I don't have a lot of notes on Act 2. It was a pretty good. Yeah, Ezra. I'm going to call him the Lothcat Whisperer from now on.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, anyway, moving on. The only other note I have, and this cracks me up every time they reference it, Kallus says to Farkin, "As you wish," which is, you know, sort of a callback to Boba Fett saying "as you wish" to Darth Vader. But whenever I see someone now do that "as you wish" quote, I go to the Princess Bride.
Yeah.
So now every time someone says "as," even when I see it in Empire, when Boba Fett says "I as you wish," I'm like, "Aw, Boba Fett loves Darth Vader." Aw, Kallus is just really telling Farkin that he loves him. That's all I got for Act 2. I hear you got a few things to say about it.
I got a lot of notes about this. A good chunk of them is actually about the whole scene with Oresco and Grint. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh, yeah, you got a good amount of notes here, yeah.
7 of these notes is about the scene with Oresco and Grint. Here we go. I like how the scene is framed with Oresco and Grint when they're telling their report to Tarkin, because even when they're talking to him, you can always see the Grand Inquisitor just behind them. And it adds just this tension to the scene where you know he's right there at all times. Like, he's never out of the scene when the two of them are there. So it's just kind of this, like, silent threat that's always behind them. And you can actually kind of see, like, them a couple times just kind of, like, shift their eyes to the side.
You don't want to be a guy and have a Grand Inquisitor sidling up behind you while you're telling your story. It's not a good sign.
So that was a really well-done way of... Because they could have just been close enough to just see their faces, but they always have Grande in the background, even when it's a close-up on them. And it's nice. It's a very visual way to add tension to the scene. So it was very nicely framed. I also like that Farkin states that our rebels have morals, because we know from later seasons that we'll meet people like Saul Guerrera, and Saul Guerrera is more like a terrorist. Him and his partisans are terrorists. And we even have people like Cassian from Rogue One, who is a killer who works for the rebels. So I like this, because when Tarkin says, "Oh, these rebels have morals," it's a plan making. He knows that he's making a plan so he can fight nice rebels. He would fight, say, Saul Guerrero's partisans differently, because they don't care about, like, people getting killed and stuff like that. So he would have to fight them differently than he would fight these rebels. And it's nice, because that differential between nice rebels and someone like Saul Guerrera is showing how Farkin is making his plan.
Nice rebels.
Nice rebels.
Nice rebels.
I also think it's very telling that Oresco and Grint didn't know about the other rebel cells. Lower level officers in the Empire are on the need-to-know basis. And we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago about how when the more Kallus gets more involved with people higher up in the chain, because right now he's only dealt with people like Oresco and Grint. So he's not aware of, like, the bigger stuff. But, like, as he starts dealing with more people like Tarkin and Thrawn and stuff and Vader, he starts seeing more of the evil and the corruption from the higher-ups.
Well, by the nature of the evil and corruption in, like, a hierarchy like the Empire, like, the guys on the lower level, you got to keep them need to know, because they're usually... To be that kind of person and to do that kind of job, you just have to sort of be sort of, and when I say ugly, I mean ugly on the inside. You got to be kind of stupid and ugly. And those two are a couple of, you know, dumb, you know, they would have been robbing people probably if they weren't in the Empire, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a Clockwork Orange when, you know, when the gang gets busted, half of them become cops. They end up going to the police, becoming police in that world, because they can now beat people up and not get in trouble for it. So
I've never seen that movie.
Oh, it's a classic. One of my favorites.
I know it's a classic, but yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, there was something that's very specific. I forgot where I read it, but like they would specifically target bullies to bring into the lower levels of the Empire and to be right. stormtroopers and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, it's kind of I was kind of surprised to see him go because I thought these guys were going to be sort of the comedy relief, Imperials.
Yeah, I mean that's a dark moment to be honest, and I think that was like it has. I feel like the thing with Luminara in Rise of the Old Masters was kind of the first big dark moment, and this is the second big dark moment to show like, hey, this is not just for kids. It's bigger and darker than you thought.
It's funny that we talked about Clone Wars being so much more violent and dark and PG-13, but you know, I mean, yeah, now it's a lot darker when a flunky gets it because it's not a droid. You know, it was comedy relief because a droid would screw up and, you know, the general would just kick him off the side of the building and watch him die
And he would just be like, why?
Yeah, now it's real people. I mean, Kallus did that a few episodes back, you know. Stormtrooper, I'm pissed. I'm generally pissed off and I'm just going to take it out on you and kick you
into
the abyss. Real human being with parents and everything.
Yeah. That's actually all about my next note. Because I have several mini little notes for that. So, like, Orisco and Grint's death is such an oh shit moment on very many multiple levels. For what we're talking about. Because, like, it is very grim and it's very dark. And because they are real people, you know, they probably, one of them, I would say Orisco probably has a family. He seems like he's older than Grint, or at least they have friends and, like, people that they work with who would, like, question where they are. And so, like, it's an oh shit moment. I like how it's set up because it's totally obvious that Grande isn't on Farkin's plan to kill Orisco and Grint. But Kallus and Tua are totally not in the know. Like, they did not know what was happening. But I think it also says, like, a lot about Tarkin. Because he blew off the Jedi in Act 1. And, like, he blew off Force users. But it's not below him to use one. And in this case, Grande is the one that does his dirty work. Which is very evil.
I think Tarkin's a big fan of using Force users to do his dirty work.
Yeah, and I think that says a lot about his character. Like, he doesn't like Force users, but he sure will use them.
Tarkin will use anything or anybody to get to the top. That's a good Imperial officer.
Yeah.
He knows his job.
Yeah, and that's why Tarkin is the best Imperial officer, because he will. I also really think this is the first really big moment of Kallus' shift towards defecting. Because he's been a pretty bad guy all season. And as we just said, he kicked a guy to his death. We know he was part of the Lasat massacre. And I think the difference between, like, say, like, the Lasat massacre and this is, for one, like, Kallus was doing his duty. You know, it still doesn't make it right that it happened, but it was part of his job. And they were the enemy. This is war. They were the enemy. He went in to fight for them. But here, it's different because Orisco and Grint are loyal. They're loyal to the Empire. They are loyal soldiers. Like, they're bad at being soldiers, but that doesn't mean that they're not loyal to the Empire. And so when Kallus sees that and sees here, he sees firsthand that the Empire really doesn't care for its subordinates. And I think, because, like, normally if this was the real world, like, Orisco and Grint would probably have been fired or demoted. But here, they're killed. And as someone who is loyal to the Empire and, like, someone who, Kallus, he likes order, he likes rules, he likes structure, I don't think that sets well with him at all. Because if they did fail, but they were loyal soldiers, and the Empire rewarded their loyalty by killing them. And I just don't think that's... Yeah,
that's not the point. That I think the point of Tarkin was, I'm going to yell at you, I'm going to yell at Grande, and I'm going to yell at her, those two. They're disposable, so we'll dispose of them and make sure that you don't get disposed of because you're right up next up the ladder. Okay, we got rid of, you know, it was just a raw show of Tarkin's power. Tarkin says, I came here, somebody's going to die. Somebody's got to die because
someone's got to die. You better make sure it's the rebels.
Yeah, I'm not here to just go, come on, you guys, get your shit together. I'm here to say, all right, oh, you guys don't have your shit together. Well, here's two less people to get their shit together. Now you guys get your shit together. It didn't matter if they were good soldiers, bad soldiers, or whatever. They were a object lesson for everybody else in that room.
Yeah.
Not for them. They're dead.
But I think I think this is the really first big shove of Kallus, like, working towards defecting, because he for one is loyal to the Empire and he respects order, and when he sees that two people who are loyal not get rewarded for their loyalty, even if they had failed and stuff like that, I think that really shook Kallus. So I think this is the first big step of him defecting, and it's this moment right here is his first step of that, because he definitely looks shaken when that happens.
I don't understand how he got to where he is without knowing that it was that way. You know what I mean?
Well, I think the ISB is a little bit separate because they're not like normal soldiers or generals or admirals. They're agents. So I think that while he probably has seen some like field of, like, well, we know he was at the Battle of Lassan, and stuff like that. But I think it's different then because he's there to do a duty. Like, it's just like if any other clone went into a battle in Clone Wars, like he's there to do their duty and stuff like that. But I think like once he became an ISB agent, I don't think he was in the middle of that as much. And I think it's different from going into a battle and fighting an enemy than looking at a Rusko and Grint, who he's worked with all season and he knows them both personally, and then he sees them get killed. I think that's a very different thing than him going into a battle to fight an enemy.
It's quite intense. I don't know. It's quite an intense thing to show somebody, you know, like, I mean, if Kallus was just sort of, you know, a green, naive, joined the Empire, moved up the ranks fast for some reason, maybe had some nepotism and got up there and then was like, oh, my God, the horror. Kallus is somebody who has participated in and took a leadership role in genocide. You know, he's a barbarian in some ways. You know, he's gone onto somebody's world and just like not just wiped them out because he was doing his job. He took a little bit of personal pride into it. And when he sees Zeb, he's like, one got away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's a personal affront to him and his job that he didn't kill one of these people. You know, one of these people are still alive. So to get you to the point of, I mean, there's one thing being a soldier in an army and you're taking orders and you may not know, you know, I mean, you can go right to World War II for that, for all the you know, and analogs to that. And, you know, say that, you know, there or you got swept up in it and, you know, you couldn't get out of it or whatever. But Kallus took a role in it. So it's interesting that he turns and, you know, I mean, if it was a little less of a kiddie show, they might have had a longer period, you know, a longer period where nobody trusted it, you know, like. In real life, I don't know how much I would trust Kallus as, like, I'm a rebel now. I'd be like, okay.
Okay, I have a counter to this. My counter is that, not that I'm defending genocide, because I am not defending genocide. But when he was so, like bragging about and stuff like that, he was right in the middle of a battle with Zeb. So I'm wondering how much of that was just, like, the heat of battle and he was trying to, like, taunt Zeb and stuff like that. Because we also know to jump ahead a little bit, from the Honorable Ones, he tells Zeb Lassan wasn't supposed to go that way. Like, that wasn't supposed to happen. And so I'm wondering when he was, like, being all gusto about it and taunting him about it, if it was just, like, a heat of the battle kind of tactic.
Either way,
Zeb really angry.
Either way, the reality of what happened to Zeb's people is a reality. You know,
yeah, it
I
is
mean?
Still a reality, and that's why I'm saying I'm not defending genocide. But like, the more I kind of look back at that scene, the more I'm wondering if he's kind of bragging a little bit about it, because we know from later seasons that it's something that he regrets.
I'm
wondering if it was just that moment was a heat of battle moment.
I'm just saying it would just be nearly impossible. For me, anyway, to realistically portray successfully, you know, and not make the show suffer for it, his, you know, what it would take to really see his, you know, him changing his mind and other people being able to accept that, even, you know, because I don't know, like, how forgiving I would be of somebody who even who committed genocide and even was like, I honestly have changed my ways. I realize how horrible what I did was, you know, something like that. You know, I mean, personally, somebody who went through that moral change, I would think there would be struggles with suicidal impulses and stuff like that, you know.
You know, that's kind of why I feel like, because it's
not the kind of stuff you want to throw in Star Wars Rebels.
And that's kind of the thing I kind of sort of talked a little bit about. I recently wrote a post on geekygirlexperience.com called Rebels Remember when I was looking back on Rebels. And when I was talking about Kallus' character, I said one of the biggest things that I felt like the show missed was having him more in season four. Because he defects at the end of season three, and then we have him in season four, but he's barely there. And I wouldn't mind of having, I really loved to have a scene where he talks about that, at least to Zeb, you know, like, and like talks like about the, defecting, or at least showing
that. Easy shorthand to deal with his, like, if you were, not necessarily a bad writer, but a bad writer, a lazy. If you were wanted to be a lazy writer and deal with it, you would have him sacrifice himself.
Yeah.
Once he turned, you know, he would do something that saved an awful lot of people's lives, but it would kill him in turn, and his sacrifice would also be the payment for his, you know, partial payment for his crimes.
That's the thing. He has a really good arc until the season three finale, and then they don't ever address it. He's just willingly accepted. He works on Yavin 4. He's there with everybody. And we don't get to see, like, I was hoping to have a scene where he gets to Yavin and people don't trust him right away. He has to earn their trust. And that's where fan fiction is wonderful. It's been thoroughly explored in fan
right,
fiction.
Right. And it's funny, in the Star Trek Discovery show, they're dealing with a character who was had a artificially split personality put into him, or, you know, was at the same time two people, and as one person killed somebody on the ship, and now he's back on the ship as their ally after being straightened out. And yeah, and people are, and they're it's Star Trek, so they're going into the nuances of, you know, yeah, people are like, yeah, you're a different guy, but I don't care, you killed my friend, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So, but, you know, I mean, to cover that, to really do that, like, from a real character point of view, would have been like, would have kind of spoiled a lot of what you wanted to do in Rebels. But
I just always
thought Kallus kind of skated by a little easy, but
I feel that way too. I would have been even just been happy with a scene in season four where Zeb was like, how are you adjusting to Yavin? He's like, it's been hard. People don't really trust me, but I don't blame them. And Kallus and Zeb would be like, well, we'll just have to earn that then.
Yeah.
End of scene. That's all I needed. Yeah. That took 15 seconds. That would have been enough for me just to be like, yeah, people haven't trusted me here yet, but I'm just going to keep working because this is what I believe in. And Zeb being like, good man, let's go. That's all I needed, 15 seconds. So. My last note on Orisco and Grunt's desk is, poor Tua, she's so in over her head. She's just so shaken. Poor girl. I wrote she just got in way over her head. No,
she is more of a character than, like, I would buy her character's change over to the Rebels more than Kallus's, because she seems like somebody who's been brought up through more of the, you know,
we know
of officers and stuff, and not maybe on battle as a battle person as much. So she's more of a technocrat than anything else, you know.
She's been brought up on propaganda, and this is the first time she's seeing the truth.
Right, and when you have a propaganda person like that, you know, you educate them in colleges and stuff, and you keep them away from the front. You keep them away from seeing, you know, people getting their heads cut off by the Grand Inquisitors in general, because that makes it harder for them to write their propaganda unless they're like a real ghoul. And she's not a ghoul. She's just somebody who's been brought up a certain way and thinks that that's the way to do it. You know, she totally thinks she's a good guy. So, yeah, I would have totally bought her turning a lot easier. It would have, or at least such a shift, but Yeah, she's definitely sitting there going just like, oh, geez.
Yeah.
That was uncalled for.
Yeah. Well, we got to keep booking because I just saw what time it was. And I'm like, oh, no, we're still in Act 2. So a very nice flashback scene for me. The scene where Sabine, Kanan, and Ezra are on top of the little highway overhang thing, and they're looking down at the communication tower. From that moment to the end of the episode was actually the first thing I ever watched for Rebels.
Oh.
I remember it very thoroughly, because this was 2015, so I was probably waiting for Gravity Falls to come on. And I actually looked it up. It would have to be the Northwest Mystery Mansion episode, where they go to the Northwest Mansion of Gravity Falls for this to match up. So I was probably waiting for Gravity Falls to come on, and I just happened to turn to the channel. And it's funny, you know, like, going back and, like, and rewatching this, because, like, I know all these characters now, and I love all these guys. But I remember, like, when I was watching it, and from that scene of them on top of the overhang to the end of the episode, I had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking that Sabine was really cool, and I remember thinking that the fight with the Grand Inquisitor in X3 was really cool. And I was also really surprised to see Tarkin in the episode. But even then, it still took Ahsoka coming into the season, coming into the show, for me to finally, like, sit down and, like, watch the show all the way through from the beginning. But it's just really fun, because, like, every time I see that scene of them on top of the highway thing, I'm just like, oh, this is the first thing I ever saw of Rebels. So it's fun, because I didn't know who anyone was except for Tarkin. So it's fun seeing it now, because...
In context,
yeah. Yeah, I do remember watching this being like, I don't know what's going on. But it's on, so I'm going to watch it. So, remember a few episodes ago when Ezra was getting his face ripped off by a Lothcat because he couldn't connect with it? Already, since the breakthrough that he had in gathering forces, we're seeing Ezra growing in his abilities. Because, like, Sabine and Kanan were the two that were going, we don't know what to do about this probe droid. And then Ezra's the one that goes, let me find a Lothcat. It's right there.
And, once he got that big mama creature down and those creatures down, now Lothcats are just like easy targets for him. He didn't even he just knew there was one in there. He was just like, I'll just grab a random Lothcat out of the brush. You know, he didn't even have to make eye contact with it. So, yeah.
And it's fun watching him grow in these abilities because we know animal wrangling is like one of his big main powers. And, like, we also know that I think it's fun in this episode that Ezra's growing in his rebel skills, too, because there's two instances so far in this episode where they're like, wow, Ezra, that was a nice plan. Wow, Ezra, good job with that. So it's fun because he's also
starting to think. Yeah, no, he's starting to get it.
Yeah, and he's starting to think
more. I think that's what she actually says.
Yeah, so I just enjoy watching Ezra growing in his skills because they're growing nicely and he's picking up those lessons. Again, this is kind of like what I mentioned forward, so I'm not going to harp on it too long. I noticed Grande often standing behind Tarkin in his office, and I just really want some clarity about who outranks who. I was under the impression that he only answers to Vader and Palpatine, but it's clear that he's taking orders from Tarkin. Because I was under the impression...
Yeah, then why call in Tarkin if Tarkin doesn't outrank him?
Yeah, because I was under the impression that... When he works with Tua, or he was working with Admiral Constantine a few episodes ago, it was because they were aiding him on his mission. But now we see that it's not true here. So I just want that clarity of
the Rebels lays out the chain of command because you see the chain of command as the order of when they show up at Rebels on Rebels.
Yeah.
Because right now we got Tarkin, and the next one coming outranks Tarkin, and then at the end of the whole show, the big boss man shows up.
I don't know. I think of like if you put Tarkin and Vader beside each other, I think they're equally, but they do different things. So I just feel like with Grande being in the Vader side of things, that it's just a completely different rank from like Tarkin and what he does, and like that's how it is in my mind. So. When I see it here, I'm a little bit confused. So I just want a clarity of, like, where does all the ranks fall when it comes to the Inquisitorius?
Like officially, Vader might outrank Tarkin, but he also respects him. And, like, you're never really sure if Tarkin's ordering around of Vader isn't just for for everybody else to see in the room, you know.
I have to say though, there's a great. I think it's the Charles Soule run of Darth Vader. There's a great scene where like Tarkin is just talking to Vader, and in the side panel, Vader's just having images of just like force choking Tarkin. He's just listening to Tarkin and imagine just like killing him as Tarkin's just talking.
I'm crushing your head.
Yeah. I think it's the second annual, the one that took place on Geonosis. I think it's that annual. But it's just great because Tarkin is just listening to Tarkin while imagining just killing him. It's a great little moment.
Sure, a lot of people spend some time doing that.
Yeah. And my last note for Act 2. I told you, this is where the majority of my notes were. When Kanan says they all have to make sacrifices and move forward, my heart kind of cried a lot because we know in Season 4 that both his and... We know Kanan and Ezra's story of Season 4, like, going into this. So when he was saying that they all have to make sacrifices and stuff like that, I have to wonder if that's clear foreshadowing to the bigger story and if they had planned that far out to Season 4 at this point.
On the second... Going through my first time through, I would have said no, but I think on the second viewing, I'm saying yes, because upon the second viewing, knowing what's happening first, they definitely had a lot more planned out than it seemed like the first time you watched it through.
Yeah,
so
the first time you're watching this, you could probably be like, oh, he's talking about
this. They're making
episode.
It up as they go along, but they.
You could almost say it was a foreshadow for this episode, because we know in Act 3, Kanan gets captured, so that's a quote unquote sacrifice that he makes. But like knowing the bigger story, I feel like, yeah, this is a much better story, like foreshadowing of Season 4.
Yeah, no, they can put two layers of depth to that sacrifice. So yeah, no, I think they were definitely thinking about this, at least having the characters' arcs sketched out by this point.
Yeah, me too. Oh, that's all I have for Act 2.
All right, you want to finish this puppy up?
Oh, yeah. So I told you I had a lot of notes for this episode.
Act 3 isn't that long of an act, really.
Yeah, so Act 3. What I assume is that night, the rebels start their attack on the communications tower. And Sabine hauls in a bomb and takes out one of the turrets. And Zeb is doing what he does best, and he knocks out some stormtroopers. And they get past all the guards and get inside. And Sabine and Chopper start installing the data spike. But the alarms go off, because the Empire is there. And outside, Kanan and Ezra watch as the Empire's airships and transports come in. And Kanan tells Ezra to get Zeb, but the Blueberry wants to stay and fight with Kanan. But Kanan tells him to go, and he calls Hera to change their pickup from the bottom of the tower to the top. During all this, Sabine gets the data spike installed, and she's just about to book it out of there with Chopper. But when he gets all the kids together, Space Dad tells all the kids to go to the top of the tower and that he'll be right behind them.
Oh my god, you know how long it's been since I've ever heard... I didn't know that you guys said that down south.
What?
Booking it on out of there? I haven't heard that since I was a little kid.
Really?
We were in that car, we were just booking on down the street.
Oh my god, I see booking either all the time.
You were either booking or trucking on down the street. But booking
I see booking all the time.
Oh wow, I haven't heard that since... That was a Scott Gardner and I, his little kids phrase that we used to use all the time.
Huh, maybe it's making its way back.
I thought it was from our area.
No, I say it a lot. So maybe not all the time, but I do say it a lot. So
it should. I like booking.
Well, anyway, Kanan shuts the door and he turns to meet Callus and Mr. Grande, who jumps out of a plane like a freaking sexy cat, and he makes a wonderful superhero landing. And oh my god, it was beautiful. I love how he jumps because he kind of jumps. Hovers and then drops. Oh, it was so good. And Kanan cuts the lock on the door so they can't get in. Grande and Kanan start to fight, and Grande sees that Kanan has been practicing. And Grande says that somebody wants to meet Kanan, and he might just let their friends live if he comes quietly. And Kanan shuts off his lightsaber, but it's just to buy a few more seconds until Hera can arrive. And he resumes the fight with Grande, but Grande just pins him up against the wall with the Force. Up top, the kids are facing off against the airships, but Hera swoops in and shoots one down while Sabine uses a grenade to blow up the other one. And Space Mom gets all the kids on the Phantom, and Kanan calls in for her to leave. Hera doesn't want to leave him, but he gets serious and he calls her Hera, not Spectre 2. And she grits her teeth, and Hera flies away, leaving Kanan behind. What I assume is the next morning, Tarkin flies in and meets with Grande and Kanan. and Tarkin is all pleased with Grande until Kallus drops the bad news. The communications tower is locked and the rebels are broadcasting. And they listen to Ezra, who makes an awesome speech for them, and he hopes and for everybody to hear. And he says that they can't be afraid to back down. Lothal has to fight. They can't fear the Empire, because they will win together as one. And Tarkin blows up the communication tower, something that Kanan probably thought they would try and save. And Farkin says, "You don't know what it takes to win a war, but I do." Meanwhile, Ezra turns to Space Mom and wonders if it was all worth it. And she says that it was, and that this isn't over. The end.
It's not over. Okay, Farkin. I know what it takes to win a war.
Say what?
That was the stupidest shit ever, I gotta say. Okay?
I didn't understand your dumb voice. What did your dumb voice say?
You do not know how to win a war, but I do.
For one, okay. They got their entire message out. It blew up just as they were wrapping up. I would have been like, oh, wait, they're wrapping up. Don't blow it up. And then gone in and not let them use it again. I would have doubled, tripled the security force around it and said, yeah, they're going to, you know, we got to, and let's get some security on those, on those spikes so they can't do it again. No, he blows up the whole thing, which I imagine is very useful for the Empire, too, if they have it in the...
That's the thing. Would he have kept talking if they didn't blow it up, though? Like, they could have kept using it until they got in there. And like, Ezra could have talked for, like, 3 hours.
He was wrapping it up. No, he was wrapping it up because they couldn't see the tower. They were just in the ghost, like...
He was just talking until the radio thing fizzled out.
Right. But I mean, literally it fizzled out right when he was just like, all right, Godspeed, good luck, everybody. And, you know, fight the good fight. Boom, blow it up. It's like, no, why not just go in there, cut all the power to it, go in there, fix whatever they, you know, take out whatever they put in and then up the security on it. Instead, they blow up, you know, what's got to cost billions of space dollars to build that, and I imagine it served a useful purpose for the Empire. It probably of communication to other places and transmissions of their own propaganda.
I'm gonna add my note.
Lost their propaganda machine, and the rebels got their whole broadcast put out. So I don't see how, you know, I mean, Tarkin was making a point, but his point of cutting the two guys' heads off was worked a lot better, makes a lot more logical sense. This one was just like, okay.
I'm going to jump in because I actually have a note about this, too. So I'm gonna
I know how to win a war. Blow up my own shit.
See, I actually really like that scene because I think it, to me, that shows like what Tarkin's willing to do. Because they said earlier in the episode that the communication towers is really important to the Empire. They said earlier that it broadcasted the entire system. And you can actually see the shock on Kanan's face because Kanan probably thought that they would have more time. You know, they would take their time cutting into the tower. They would try to find the spike and that they would have a lot more time. And I think it's a writing thing that it just sounds like Ezra was wrapping up his thing. I think if the radio thingy didn't cut out, Ezra would have just kept talking. I just think it was a writing and a voice acting choice to make it sound like he wrapped it up.
Yeah, because there's other ways than blowing it up to cut Ezra off. You go in there and you remove the
But it would
spike.
Still take time. And or that's
you,
the thing.
Yeah, it but was, you take your guns and you shoot the main power cable that's going into it, you know.
But it would still take time. And so I like that it was a very dramatic thing because Kanan was you could tell by the look on Kanan's face when it blew up that he never thought Tarkin would destroy his own shit.
I think it works 100% dramatically. I just don't think if you look into it if you look at it too long, it doesn't hold up logically, but it holds up dramatically
but like,
and character-wise.
But dramatically, like, this is a very important structure on Lothal, and Tarkin doesn't care. He just blows it up. He just destroys it. And it does work dramatically, and that's why I think And that's why I think it works really well, because it just shows how cold Tarkin is. He's like, oh, this is a very... I think Tarkin would blow up the Imperial Palace if it got him power.
Yeah, but here's the thing is, what's the next thing you're going to have to do is build another one of the goddamn things. Because they're important. Little
ones. That was just the biggest one on Lothal.
Yeah, but you if it served an important use, you're going to have to build another one.
Yeah.
or you're shooting yourself in the foot, you know? So... okay. it made a good point dramatically, and while I watched it, it was just like, oh, okay, good point. And then it's like now later in the hours of sleep and contemplation that I go like, oh.
Yeah, but I just wanted to jump in because I had a note on that scene too. So what's the rest of your notes for Act 3?
The only notes I have is I love the Empire version of the sort of clone trooper transports, the little mini versions of them.
Yeah, I like that they reuse all the ships. That would make sense because they have all these ships from the Republic, so just throw some paint on them.
They threw some paint on them. They did a little redo on them. They looked a little smaller and squatter, but yeah, I thought that was neat. And Tarkin gets to wear a little hat. He gets to wear a little hat.
His little General Veer's hat.
His helmet. I got my helmet on. I mean business. I just thought that was funny. That's all. That's all. Literally all I got for Act 3.
Mine is if you've read Kanan the Last Padawan comic, there's actually a lot of parallels in this act in the Order 66 scene from that comic. In this version, Kanan is his master, Depa Bialba. And he's in her place trying to make Ezra leave to get to safety. And he even does what she did. He lies to Ezra and says that he's coming, that he's right behind them, which Depa does in the comics. She goes, go, Padawan, I'll be right behind you. And Kanan even notes in the comic, like, that's the only time my master ever lied to me.
Yeah, and Kanan's probably, so him doing that is probably thinking that he's going to die, you know?
Yeah. And Ezra is in Padawan Kanan's place through this scene, too. So it's a really great foil for people who have both read the comic and watched this episode. I liked that parallel between the two of them because he's just reliving that scene of his master from Order 66. So it was a very nice parallel in that scene. We're getting close to the season one finale. And this is like the fourth or fifth time that Kanan and Grande have faced off. And I love how they showed that every time Kanan goes against each other and every time they fight, Kanan just gets a little bit better every time he fights Grande. And it's leading up to that final showdown in 2 weeks when we cover it in the season one finale. So
finale.
I like that they noted that with Grande going, oh, you've been practicing. Because it shows that Kanan's been getting a little bit better every time. Oh, that Grande and Kanan fight. Ugh, I have to soak in all my Grande while I can because I only have a few more weeks of him. I only have a few more weeks of Grande because I'm not prepared. I'm not ready to let him go.
It's okay.
No, it's not. I'm not going to pull
it. You
Elsa.
Made it through Cad Bane. You'll make it through Grande.
I'm not over Cad Bane, Chris.
I know.
I'm never going to be over Cad Bane. I'm not over it. Oh, I'm not over it. I'm not going to pull it, Elsa. I'm not going to let it go. Sorry, I had to laugh at my dumb Disney joke. I do love Kallus in this fight because he doesn't do anything. He shows up and he stands there.
Yeah, well, he's kind of out of his kind of out of his pay scale.
Yeah, and I give that note, like, he's there as a support role. Like, if for some reason Grande died, Kallus would be the next line of defense.
Right, right.
And so he is playing a support role in case Grande fails, but since
he's letting the one Force user deal with the other Force user, it's a smart plan.
See, I would have rather had it to where, like, when Hera came in, than showing Kallus leading the tanks to shoot her down, even if it was just a scene of him going, shoot down that ship! Because at least then Kallus would be actively in the fight. But instead, he's just standing there. And I was like, yeah, Kallus, stand. Yeah. And my last note is, after I spin on my screen, let me wipe that off. There we go.
Yeah.
I would actually argue that this episode is more about the Imperials than the Rebels.
Well, it starts right out with the Imperial music, like, full theme.
Yeah.
As music.
And I think they actually have more screen time in this than the Rebels. This is their story about being under Tarkin in his reign and how they can adjust to him. And to me, like, the Imperial side of the story this week is the more interesting side of the story. And now that I look back at it, like, I have more notes about the Imperials in this episode than the Rebels. And I like that. Like, it's a good look at the Empire and the lower ranks of the Empire through the eyes of our Imperials that we've gotten to know so far. So I like that about this episode, that this is an Imperial episode. This is not a Rebels episode. This is an Imperial one. Anything else?
No, that's all I got.
All right, well, that's all I got, too. Let's score it up, Chris.
Okay, I haven't scrolled down enough to see your score. Oh, yeah, we are different.
Yeah? Did any of my notes bump it up at all?
No, not really. I'm sorry, Hope.
They usually don't. I've gotten used to that now. But I always hope that one day. I think I've
I'm
done
a rock,
one
Hope,
time.
A rock. No,
I think one time I've gotten you to bump up your notes.
I think it's been more than once, but what?
I think two times I've gotten you bump up your notes.
I gave it an 8.0 with an extra 0.5 for Tarkin. No, I did not. It's not that I didn't like this episode. I just thought it was a little samey, except for the inclusion of Grand Moff Tarkin and the fact that it was that it's another two-parter. But otherwise, it was still sort of like,
Technically, it's a three-parter because the only episodes left is the two-part finale.
That's right. You're right.
Yeah.
But it was a cliffhanger. You know, that's unusual. Unusual so far for the. It's only the second cliffhanger, but yeah, it was like. And like you, I think I appreciated the Imperial elements of this more than the elements of the Rebels were pretty much.
I would have almost
nothing new.
See.
They were just doing, you know, they were doing their thing. They were the secondary story. They were a secondary to the machinations of what's going on the Imperial side. But
I almost would have loved to see a lot of the Rebel stuff played out, but through the Imperials. So like. Those earlier scenes up until the final battle, it's them just going, oh, we think that this is the plan, and just showing like Callus Tua and Grande.
Yeah, just show it all from the Imperial side. That would have been interesting.
Yeah, and like showing like Tua just being like, well, what are we going to do? We have to do this. And Callus being like, okay, here's the plan. And Grande being like, no, we should do this plan. Like, I would have loved, because I love that trio.
Yeah, and everything we saw the Rebels was either through their eyes or through the probe droid's eyes and stuff like that. A lot of it was, but we did see a lot of, you know, just sort of your standard, you know, the story sitting with the Rebels and stuff. I think that would have been a neat little innovation to do it all from the Imperials' point of view.
Yeah, because they've introduced like some interesting dynamics, but we have yet to actually play it out. Like, I think it was either last week or the week before we saw Callus say like, oh, well, the Grand Inquisitor can do his thing, but I'm going to do my thing.
Right.
And I would have liked to see that on screen of like the two of them and Tua trying to make a plan. And like those two button heads where Callus is like, we need to do it like this. And the Grand is like, no, we should do it this way. Like that would have been this would have been a perfect 10 for me. If this entire thing was through the Imperial's eyes, like the episode through Imperial eyes, mm-hmm. Because the Rebel story is just a same old Rebel story. The only thing that really happens is we get to see Ezra grow more. Nothing else really happens on the Imperial side.
Right, right.
Or on the Rebel side, I should say. So what was your score, 8 or 8.5?
It was an 8.0.
All right. Well, for me, to me, this is a big turning point episode. Before, it was very much lighthearted and more adventure of the week and stuff like that. But with Tarkin arriving, it ties into the much bigger story of Star Wars. It ties more into that original trilogy and the bigger thing. And things are starting to get way more dangerous, and we're shifting into the bigger storylines, and this is an important change in Rebels. Because after this point in Rebels, we never go back to that adventure of the week feeling. It never goes back to that. And Tarkin is a great threat, and it's interesting to watch all of our villains fear him. And there's also a lot of foreshadowing for later seasons, so I love this stuff. So while Chris gave it an 8.0, I gave this a 9.5 out of 10.
We'll be seeing this in a few weeks in the roundup, I think.
This, to me, is the best episode of the series so far, up to this point. I think this is the best episode so far in the series, hands down. It's awesome, so... Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on Twitter, iTunes, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. Oh, I have to note, I just got some feedback today, and I didn't put it into the notes. I'm just going to pull it up right fast. But while I'm loading this, we especially like reviews on iTunes, because when you rank and review us on iTunes, it helps people find the show. We haven't had an iTunes review in a while, so if you like our show, give us a shout-out over there. Before I get into the official feedback, I got a tweet from John Wilson, and he wrote, "Hey, Jagas and Jedi, a friend of mine asked me what I wanted as a gift from her trip to Iceland, and I knew there could only be one thing I asked for, and he has an Icelandic Kit Kat bar."
Ooh.
I know, so that's nice tie-in. So, John, I'm glad you got your Kit Kat bar. But this week, our feedback comes
from... Wait, he didn't give us a review of his Icelandic Kit Kat bar? He just said he's got one?
Yeah, and he sent us a picture. We need a review of it, because that's what we do in our show.
Yeah. I mean, come on, man. Don't be stingy.
Yeah. Well, this week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode covering Gathering Forces. And you guys, there's a lot of things here. So, yeah, let's do it.
All right, first one's from Patrick Delmore. He says, "I'm way behind, but I've
been
waiting."
What are you doing? Where's your Patrick Delmore voice?
Oh, shit.
I'm way behind.
Let me get into character here.
I know. What is wrong okay. with you? It has been a while since we've had a Patrick Delmore one.
I know. I'm so in Paul C. Kelly mode. Okay, Patrick Delmore says, "Oh, God, I got to do Hope's voice, too." All right. Let me get a drink of water. I'm going to be doing some work here.
Yeah, you are. The only person that you don't have a voice here, I think, is... I know, you have a voice for every single one
of these. I'm doing all the voices, so let's go.
I'm going to sit back and enjoy.
So Patrick, quote unquote, enjoy. Patrick Delmore says, "I'm way behind, but I've been waiting to hear what both of you have to say about this. Ezra more powerful than Luke." And then Hope says, I don't think we mentioned Luke at all. But I do fangirl over how hot the Grand Inquisitor is. We do, I think. Talk about Ezra's progress and how it affects the rest of the show. And then Patrick comes back with, "This was the one where I said, he's the same age as Luke and Leia, but way more powerful. I had a theory for a while that Ezra was just a force projection of Luke." Ooh, well, so- you're way ahead on the force projection thing, though.
So, yeah, we didn't really talk about that because I didn't think about this when we were doing the episode. I personally don't think that Ezra is more powerful than Luke. I just think they have different kinds of power. Because, yeah, I always forget that Ezra is the exact same age as Luke and Leia. They're the exact same age.
Ezra's getting way more training.
And I think that's all there is to it. Yeah.
He's got day-to-day training with Kanan for months and months and months at a time. You know, months have gone by since he's joined up with the Ghost crew. So, you know, Luke literally had a ride on the Millennium Falcon with Obi-Wan Kenobi and then a few days with Yoda. And that's it.
And I really
then a few more days with Yoda as he, you know, was waiting to go rescue Han a few days. So, you know, okay.
And I really do think that that is the clear difference. I don't think that they're more powerful than other. Ezra just has more training. And I think that really is the difference.
Yeah. So. Yeah. He's getting more concerted effort towards it. More direction from another person.
Yeah. I also just always forget that Ezra is the exact same age as Luke and Leia. I always forget about that.
All right. Here's one from Paul C. Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Hope. On your struggles with the Thrawn trilogy, like things being convenient for the good guys, being written in the 90s, that type of story I think was sufficient to please Star Wars fans back then who had only seen the original trilogy at that point. Did not have much else to compare it to. Oh no. I think I was only like 15 the first time I read this, and it was great for me then. And it was great for me once again in my 20s. But I think after seeing all the stories in Clone Wars and Rebels, we definitely now have a higher expectation what is provided in our Star Wars novels. I guess. Darth Plagueis did a little better than having the protagonist, who is actually the bad guy, get stumped a little bit at points in the story. I'm sorry, I slipped out of character for a little while in that sentence. I don't know what's wrong with me. There's a point where he gets betrayed, or more like outwitted, by somebody at one point that I was not expecting. Also, the backstory for Palpatine is fantastic in that story. And Hope says, I totally get that too. One thing I keep getting is how bullshitty Thrawn can be an heir to the Empire. Like, he knows Leia is on the ship because he counted, like, 23 seconds or something. And there's no explanation on how he got there. But in the 2017 Thrawn novel, you're, like, inside Thrawn's head. You're, like, watching him make deductions in real time. So it doesn't feel as bullshitty to me. So when I read that first, it was more what I was expecting in air. And I do agree the content is much more... And I do agree the content now is much higher storytelling too. Paul C. Kelly says, I'm excited to start reading the canon novels now. Oh yeah. Finishing up Splinter the Mind's Eye. Ooh. Once done, my plan is to read the Ahsoka novel and then Thrawn 2017. Oh boy. I may never be able to get back to the EU after that. LOL.
I do have to say, because...
I'm not done LOLing, I hope.
I do have to say, because I remember listening to our episode for Gathering Forces, and I do rant for like 15 minutes about Heir to the Empire. I just want to know, I do understand the importance of Heir to the Empire and like when it came out, how it was brand new canon and stuff like that, and how it pretty much kickstarted like the EU and stuff. I understand that. But as someone going back and revisiting it, it does, like, Thrawn seems very bullshitty. And I think a lot of it is my first exposure to Thrawn was Rebels and then the 2017 novel. And I, as I said in my note, I like the 2017 novel where it's not so bullshitty because you're actually in Thrawn's head watching him make deductions.
You're not doing the voice.
Watching him make deductions. So, like, to me, it actually, it makes more sense that Thrawn is that way opposed to Heir to the Empire where he's like, Leia's on that ship. How do you know, sir? I counted 23 seconds. What? Like, it just doesn't, I like it. And I will say, if you do plan to read Ahsoka, just know it is a young reader. It's a young adult novel, so it's a little bit more straightforward. 27.3 Thrawn is excellent. I would also suggest Dark Disciple. Dark Disciple is a really great read, so especially for like Clone Wars fans. So especially if you like Ventress. And the last one, from Paul C. Kelly.
We got one more from Paul C. Kelly. Says also all the top of hyping up Ezra's parents made me think of this. Anakin Skywalker had very good parents. Turned to the dark side, where Rey had terrible parents. I don't know about Anakin's parents being too great.
Well, Shmi did her best.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, no, you're right.
Shmi did her best.
And the other one was a four, and the other parent was a four, so I guess okay. And turned to the dark side, where Rey had terrible parents and so far has maintained strength to stay on the light side. She doesn't even know him, though. She didn't have, like, abusive parents that she has no memory of them. So just hearing a lot about Rey being conceived by the Force once again, although she may have had a father. Force is going to have to go on the Maury show. Is the Force the father or not the father? Anyway, that was just a sidetrack. Funny thought, but if she was conceived by the Force, that would be really interesting, where she had bad parents, ends up staying real strong with the light side, contrasting Anakin and his good upbringing, until, of course, she decided to quickly let him go with Qui-Gon, which could negate the whole argument. LOL.
I wouldn't say that Anakin had a great upbringing. He was a slave. So... But
well,
at least
Shmi did her best. His mom was a nice, nurturing mom, you know, that I guess is what he was saying, you know. And even Watto was kind of like, go home early, you know. Watto wasn't a complete, like, you know,
jerk face.
Right, beating him up and stuff. All right. You want me to pick this one this week?
Yeah.
What shall it be?
Something small. I think we did something big last week. Ooh.
You want something small, you said?
Ooh, what is... Sorry, I'm grabbing stuff and I'm going... Ooh!
Okay, I'm calling it. We're doing Zacky.
Okay, what does it look like?
It's a little brown with its little small brown rectangle with red things.
Zacky. Hold on, I gotta find it.
D-A-C-K.
Oh, I see it. All right, so if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats, which is why people like John have to get them from Iceland for him. And actually, John didn't send it to you. So our friend Dario from Eat and Beat It sends us candy from all over the world to review. And Zacky comes from Korea.
Okay.
I'm assuming it's probably South Korea.
Yes, it's definitely South Korea.
I would only assume.
So this is a wafer with nuts and chocolate in it, it looks
like. Yeah, it's a little wafer, though. This is a tiny wafer. All right, let's wafer this waff.
Oh, it's super chocolatey for one.
Oh yeah.
It's like dark, kinda bitter around the edges chocolate.
Yeah, it's actually a lot more chocolatey than I thought it was gonna be.
It's very deep chocolatey.
Not as nutty as I thought it was gonna be though.
No, they're just sort of pepper sprinkled in there. This is good. Of course I favor the wafers, so
I like the wafers too.
So this is kind of a classic.
Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our webpage. And just coming up in another month, we'll be renewing another year of Two True Freaks, thus guaranteeing you another year. Going into our 11th year this year, which is pretty crazy. You can go to twotruefreaks.com and you can see all our podcasts. You can subscribe to the RSS feed, or you can go to iTunes to subscribe. Go to Facebook. We got the Two True Freaks page on Facebook where we do the same thing. We put up the shows. Only you can comment on the shows there. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina where you can talk about everything you want. Always a friendly place. Always just a wonderful environment. Because it's the internet. That was a joke for me and Hope.
Yeah.
we are also on Twitter. Oh my God.
What?
Twitter is run by the legendary, the unstoppable.
Oh God.
The crazy leg.
Ah!
Gene, the podcasting machine.
Mixed with like a white snake video. Gene!
A white monkey snake?
Yeah, you just need to play some guitar under that, like Gene! You can like shred on a guitar like
No way, man, I'm playing Gene's classy Gene the Dancing Machine music right now. Boom 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 boom. Anyway, that's where they can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuys and Jedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com where I write blogs and stuff. And I'm also a fanfiction writer on Archive of Our Own, where I write a Thrawn fanfiction called Forces of Gravity. Actually, this week that we are recording right now is the one-year anniversary of Forces of Gravity. So I'm very proud of that. I've been doing it for a year now. It is 19 chapters and 177,000 words.
Holy cow.
I'm working on chapter 20 right now, and this is only the first arc. I will be starting, as soon as I finish this arc, I'll be starting arc 2, which will be the Commodore years of Thrawn's life.
I remember you were like, I'm going to do this. This is going to be fun 1 year and later.
Yeah, 1 year later, I'm still writing my fan fiction. So, but that's on Archive of Our Own. My name on there is Chaos Lydia. It's called Forces of Gravity. I have a bunch of, actually, I don't think I've talked about this. I have a bunch of like Rebels one-shot fan fictions. I'm currently working on another story called The Lucky Leku, where Kallus has to infiltrate a boy band because the boy band has a rebel spy. So it's like him infiltrating NSYNC or Backstreet Boys, and he's like, what is my life? I also have a one-shot called Fire about the Grand Inquisitor. That one's Rogue One. I have one called It's Only a Matter of Time, which is about Hera and Kanan. I have one called The 10 Most Beautiful Words, Chimes Dawn. Go on, I'm not going to read all the words, but that one's a Rebels one. So I have a bunch of different Star Wars Rebels one-shots in there if you just want to read something shorter that's not. I really like the one that's called Pickled Onions. It's Cassian Andor and Agent Kallus having a fulcrum meeting. That one's a fun one. So yeah, I have a bunch of little Rebels stories too. If you don't want to read my Thrawn masterpiece, that's not a masterpiece. That's just really long. So, yeah, check it out.
AO3, or your Thrawnsterpiece.
Me and Megan for our 221 BCon panel have made badge ribbons that says Thrawnster on them, and we're going to hand them out at 221 BCon.
Oh, jeez.
I'm very excited about it.
That sounds like something you get, like, pushed out the airlock for doing, like, seeing Thrawn going, hey, it's the Thrawnster.
Thrawnerific. Originally, we were going to get four. We were going to have one. The original Thrawnster one said Thrawnster Monster, but we decided just to go with Thrawnster.
I like the Thrawnster Monster. I like that.
Yeah, Megan's paying for them, so she had final say. But the thing is, we found out that, because you get a discount when you get so many, but we found out it's only for one order. So to get that discount, we couldn't have multiple ones, because originally we were going to have Thrawnster Monster, Paleon, the OG Space Watson. For Eli Vanto, it was going to say, this is my emotional support cowboy. And then for Karen Farrow, it was going to say Commodore Farrow. Which is something that she says to Keeman in Thrawn Alliances, but we couldn't get all four, so we just settled with the Thrawnster ones. I'm so sad I don't get my emotional support cowboy ribbon.
One day, Hope. One day.
I know. That'll have to be next time. If we have any left over, we're going to bring them to Dragon Con with us. So. Well, that's all I have this week. Next week is part one of the finale.
Yay!
I only have a couple more weeks of Grande.
You guys got your first Rebels season wrap up coming up.
I only have two more weeks of Grande. You should just cut it there, Chris.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Sock it to me?